Today on Piano Jazz, we bring you an episode from 1984 with Marion McPartland and her guest, jazz vocalist and pianist, Dardanelle Hadley, born Marcia Marie Mullen, the daughter of vocalist-pianist Buck Mullen. In the 1940s, she formed a trio that played regularly at the Copacabana Club in New York, and she went on to work with jazz greats such as Bucky Pizzarelli and Grady Tate. Now, here's Marion greeting Dardanelle Hadley.
It's really a kick after all this time, Dardanelle, to have you here on the show.
I feel like I've been running around the world and finally landed in the right place at the right time, Marion, and I'm very happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad because we tried to find you when you were in Japan.
Yes.
And I'm glad you're back because this can really be, and I know it will be, a lot of fun. And I haven't heard you play in so long that I really wish you would start out with a solo.
All right.
For
I'd love to do one of Jerome Kern's pretty things. My penchant is to do pretty ballads, but I'd like to pick one that we can do a little bit of most everything with.
Okay.
All the things you are.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a pretty song, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I've heard you do some lovely things, Marion, on this particular show, because I've been listening to you just about every opportunity I have.
Well, good. I'm glad we need all the listeners we can get.
Oh, you have a lot. I just did a safari down through the South, and just about everywhere I went, someone had been hearing one of your very nice programs with our favorite pianists. They mentioned quite a few of them.
Well, I'm glad that they hear them down there, and that makes me relieved because then I know that they'll hear you when your show is on. Because you're from Mississippi, aren't you?
Yes, I'm from Greenwood, Mississippi, and I was just down that way and had a wonderful time with a real blowing stage band at Ole Miss. Did a concert down there.
You mean
there.
University of Mississippi.
Yes, uh-huh.
You forgive me, I'm from England. You know, I'm not too up on those things.
Well, they call it the Rebel State, and that's Ole Miss is the Rebel College.
Are you still a rebel?
I'm somewhat a rebel. I'm a transplanted rebel, let's call it. Having lived in New York and New Jersey and Chicago and in New England, I guess I'm a rover right now.
I remember when you were in Chicago. I don't think I knew you then, but my drummer at that time, Joe Morello, worked with you when you were on the radio at WGN.
Yes, he did. I was on staff then at WGN, was doing radio adult music and Polly Wally Doodles and Skip to Maloo's on the Kitty Show while my two boys were growing up.
Well, I was just thinking, when you came to New York, did you ever play at a place called Dixon's on 52nd?
I don't know why that popped into my mind for a very short time.
Because I remember when I came to New York from Chicago, and I was looking around and seeing people and meeting people I hadn't met, like Barbara Carroll, and I remember seeing your name up on a marquee, and that just struck my mind, in my mind, that it was a place called Dixon's.
That room that you were speaking of had Joe Mooney was there in the other room with his wonderful quartet.
Right.
And I usually got a chance to listen to everything those wonderful guys did. They were so good.
Well, you've done a lot of things. You've had a lot of different groups. In the past few years, you've made so many albums.
Yes, I'm album rich. I wish I were that money rich.
Well, I don't know. I think being album rich is pretty nice, and they're all very good albums. And
thank you.
You were showing me those, I guess, was it George Buck who found this one from years ago?
Well, George bought the World Transcription catalog, and he got everybody in the world in that. He did get Ellington, I think, and people I had really forgotten about. But at that time, we were all recording for World. Transcriptions were made for the radio stations. They were never sold for commercial use.
Oh, yeah, I remember
so
that.
So when he bought that catalog, many of the things went in without any names on them. And Mary, and I'll have to tell you a funny thing about my particular work on that one. I did 36 tunes on Vibes. They were like an order for just vibraharp. And, of course, I didn't play 36 solos at night on Vibes, so I had to rehash my piano things and come up with just changing them over for me. The boys played the same things they did. So we cut 36 tracks, and there really was no name on there, but in playing them, Wendell Eccles down there heard way over in the middle of one of them when everybody was guessing about who was playing Vibes. I stopped the tape and said, "Would somebody please turn off the air conditioning? It's making too much noise." And Wendell said, "Now I know who that is."
You mean that was right on the transcription?
Yes, it was on the because all of the outtakes, all the flubs and everything were there in that master tape. And then another spot, it was very hard for me to remember who was on guitar because we were doing it right at a time, at least I thought it was at a time when Tal Farlow had just left me. And having done so many arrangements similar, you know, when I changed man, we still played a lot the same. I couldn't tell. I listened and listened, and that's been a few years. So finally, on one of the tapes again, I said, "Tal, let's do something." And that spotted as far as. So on this album, it's very funny to me. I got a laugh out of it when I heard it the first time. I sat there and laughed at myself because we were playing such clean-cut, squeaky-clean, wonderful
squeaky
arrangements.
Clean music.
Nobody missed a note.
It's funny, isn't it? Going back and hearing yourself years ago, things that you did years ago, and then realizing how you've changed. How about another solo from you?
All right. Since seeing as how piano has been my, I guess, that's a terrible thing to say, isn't it? But it really has been a very special love for me, so I often think of it when I'm playing this particular tune, My One and Only Love.
That's a great song.
Thank you.
That's a nice song, Donna. No, that is really a pretty one. While I'm listening to you and watching you, I was wondering if you started out as a classical player.
Well, yes, I did. And I guess maybe I started out as both. That really isn't true to say that was the one thing. Because, Marion, I came out of my cradle hearing my father improvise. And I'm sure I thought everybody did it. So I started out really playing, pretty much wanting to play. And they tell me just playing. I don't remember when I learned to improvise or when I learned to play whatever we call it, pop or jazz. Because Daddy was I like to call him a white Scott Joplin because he was a planter, farmer in Mississippi, with no reason except just a great talent to play piano. And he and his two brothers had a 1,000-acre plantation to run. But Daddy came in and just through the love of the instrument sat down in the afternoons after whatever they did in the daytime on the farm. He came in and played for hours. And I heard that, and then when I started studying, I had nothing but classical training. But I guess it's all run sort of parallel, concurrently. I've been doing both of it. And I had a teacher who didn't mind. She said as long as I cut the mustard in her work, then I could do whatever I wanted to do with mine.
Well, that's great. So, because I did practically the same thing. I heard my mother play, and that's what got me playing. So I guess you just practically jumped out of the cradle and started swinging away.
Well, I had another advantage, too. And I'm dying. My woman's curiosity is killing me, and I don't know where to go to sate it, because my father's sister was a concert pianist, was trained from someone in Yazoo City, Mississippi, was a concert teacher, and she was died quite young, but they had brought a three-quarter key piano up the Mississippi on the paddle wheeler and up the Yazoo River to Greenwood and brought it out to the plantation. And I learned
a three-quarter key.
The keys on the piano were three-quarters wide. It was an 88-key piano,
but
it was from France. And
that would be hard to play, wouldn't it?
It would be hard to play now. It's the same thing I find when I jump on a set of vibes that have narrow keys, and some of them do. Some have narrow bars, and it just throws you for a spin.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're 5 or 6 years old, 4 or 5, you can reach like crazy.
Not only that, nobody's told you that it's hard and it's impossible or something.
Well, see, they were small. The keys were small enough so that with my little fingers, I understand the Yamaha people in Japan are making that three-quarter piano again, three-quarter key piano again.
Sort of for kids.
For little kids, uh-huh.
That's great.
Sure.
Well, let's us do a duet.
I'd like that very much.
I would, too.
Are you going to set the pace?
I'm going to set the pace.
All right.
And if you don't like it, you can change it.
I'll just fall in.
This is stereo. I'm on the left and you're the right.
Sure.
And I'll start it out.
You do it.
Thank you.
It started and stopped together. How about that?
Well, were you surprised? I didn't doubt it for a minute that it
not
all,
really. You
just it all work out.
You feel so good down there playing on the bottom.
Well, I thought I'd try and play a little bass line or try to.
You sure do.
As a matter of fact, I realize how hard it is for a bass player. Sometimes I'm thinking, like, oh, I wish he'd play some different notes. But it's hard when you're playing the same chords over and over again to think of good lines.
It is, and I am amazed at some of the bass players who can do that, who can get away from the old stereotype ones. But, that you know, it's so funny, Marion. I think you share the same feeling I do, that it's sometimes is so much more fun to play with the rhythm section so you can really get loose on the instrument. Don't you think so?
Well, it's funny. I love to play solo piano, but it's a different kind of a thing.
Sure. I just pull different a new stop out every time when I go into solo, too.
But playing with a good rhythm section is exciting. If everybody's together and thinking.
Well, you've had them. You've really
oh,
had some
yes,
good
I
ones.
Certainly have. Boy, I want to give a party one of these days for bass players and drummers I have known and loved.
Wouldn't that be great?
My God, we could fill this place, couldn't we?
Yes, and let me bring some guitar players along. I've had, I think that was really the blessing of my trios. I had a lot of fun, if I might bring up the record session I did recently in Atlanta. It was with a whole new gang of fellas, and it was quite inspiring. I had Ron Rico Scott on drums, and then young Louis Stefanel on all the toys, Latin percussion.
On all the toys. It's funny. That's
everything.
What I call them.
He drags all these things around, the bells and the timbales and stuff, and he's got so much of it. But he and Jan Rico work a lot together. And then I had a bass player down there who was quite good. He does a lot of rock work, but he did just acoustic bass with me. Then had a fellow, Sam Wilhoit, on tenor and flute. And it was, you know, it was kind of nice to play with people you didn't know for a change, and they really worked so hard for me. It's going to be
sure,
a nice
and especially if they all turn out to be good, which they evidently did.
Well, they know each other, too, in Atlanta, so that made it nice.
Well, do you do your own arranging at a time like that, or do you let it all fall together or talk it over?
Oh, about 50-50. I spent some time with Sam because, of course, he has the horns, and he can stand up and look at the other fellows when I'm doing a lot of singing and can't say anything. So Sam did a lot of, I would say, head conducting for me because mm-hmm. he knew previously to the date, he knew exactly what I was planning on doing. But a lot of it came off just helter-skelter, you know,
well,
clam-bake endings and things
you know,
like that.
You know, that's sort of, you know.
That's fun.
That's what jazz is, I guess.
Sure.
Speaking of which, how about a song from you, another of your many talents? You're a great singer.
Marion, you know, I don't mind singing, of course, but I must tell you, I'm delighted to be able to play as much as I'm playing today. I haven't wanted to get away from the singing, but I have been wanting to get back to the playing a little bit more. But I have a song I would like to do for you. In fact, I recorded it in the first person, and today I'd like to sing it in the third person because I think it applies to both of us.
Oh.
Lou Carter wrote this little gem for me.
Okay.
I have a frog, too. People listen, people smile. People like our swinging style. They tell us we play good for a girl. I always love that Tatum touch. Wish I could play half as much. Still they say we're good for a girl. Since total femininity is our lucky fate, it makes me laugh when someone says, hey man, you sound great. Bassy Shearing, Oscar P, we're one big fraternity. And brother, that ain't bad for a girl. To thank our audience with bass notes that say, your compliments inspire us in a left-handed way. Every time that we perform, We try playing up a storm, some hurricane named Alan or Pearl, to show we blow such grand piano for a girl. How about that?
Oh, I love it. I love it. But they don't say that too much anymore, though, do they? Not as much as before. Oh, they've got something else they say now. Lou Carter will have to write another song. They say, you still play great.
Yes, I've had that for sure.
I see. What do you mean still? Oh, well,
recently, I really haven't played vibes in so long. I've played them at home once in a while, and played them on a few record dates and things behind other people where I really didn't feel that I was playing much. But it's just recently that I've started to play vibes, and some people have come up and said, oh, you still can play vibes. I'm finding it's very hard to get back on them after being off so long, too.
All those things were so funny. Barbara Carroll and I get together once in a while and talk about things like that. And they always seem to mix us up. Like, she had quite a big record on Dancing on the Ceiling.
Oh, yes.
And people will say to me, oh, that was a nice record you made of Dancing on the Ceiling. I said, no, that's not me. It was Barbara. No, it was you. So I decided... Well, we both decided we just accept the compliment gracefully.
Well, you know what I remember.
Not try to argue.
I have an album of yours that had ba-ba-da-dum, shuffling sand.
Sand in My Shoes.
Sand in My Shoes.
Oh, I loved that.
That's the prettiest thing. Oh, that's beautiful. Do you ever play that again?
I haven't played that for ages. Well,
I'm going to make a request someday for you to do it on this program. It was lovely.
I tell you, it's a kind of a rhythmic thing. I could try to do it. Maybe I will.
It was so pretty.
In the next 10 minutes, I'll get my brain to bear. But meanwhile, how about if you and I try another duet?
And
this is a good tune. I don't know who wrote it, but you probably do. You do something to me.
You do something to me.
I'm
not going to guess, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, it may be Gershwin.
I think you're right.
I'll have to look up my little chart.
Don't worry, somebody will let us know. We shall get letters.
Yes.
Go ahead. You start this one.
Thank you.
again we came to a stop together. Isn't that fun?
Well, it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy doing these things with you.
There's more to come with Marian McPartland and her guest Dardanelle Hadley. This is Piano Jazz from NPR Music.
Well, I was talking to you before, Dardanelle, about playing on 52nd Street. Of course, you played the place that, to me, was one of the great 52nd Street clubs, the Hickory House.
Oh, sure.
But I think I was in Chicago. I evidently had not come to New York when you were at the Hickory House. I remember Mary Osborne being there. But
did
I don't
you remember,
remember
Margie Himes went in there, too? I thought Margie went in with a group.
She might have.
Paige Cavanaugh.
Well, see, that was all before my time in New York. The first person I remember being there was Mary, and I guess I hate to date myself, but it had to be around 1950, because that's when I opened in the Embers.
Yes, well, I think when I left the Hickory House, I went out. As I recall, too, I went to Minneapolis and Detroit and Chicago and then came back to New York to the Park Sheraton. But during that time, a lot of trios turned over. I know Margie Himes had a group at one time, and she played such good piano, Marion. Do you know, did you hear her play piano?
I know that she does play piano,
but piano.
I never heard her play. But it's funny because the owner there, John Popkin, he really had, had a penchant for having girl musicians in there.
Yes,
I mean, you, myself,
Joe
Pat
Marcel
Moran,
and his wife were there.
Adele Gerard, Toshiko.
Yes.
And the German girl who unfortunately, I know her. I see her once in a while, Jutta Hipp. And she quit the business.
I've heard of her.
Oh, she was wonderful.
I never had a chance to hear her.
Wonderful.
But
isn't
it funny?
Women.
Maybe he found that we were commercial, Marion.
I think he just liked girls. No, you know, that's silly, because that was one thing I think we all had in common in that room. Everybody was there to play.
Yes, that's like, for sure.
Like, I know we all wanted to dress up, but nobody was...
It wasn't a dress-up place, though. You sat up on the bar, you know, up behind the bar.
I know.
In the bar, wherever it was.
I know, surrounded by bottles. It was really a funny setup.
It was, and noisy, very noisy.
And sawdust on the floor. It doesn't really seem like a jazz place, but it was.
Yes.
One of my uncles came over from England.
And found you there?
Found me there. He couldn't believe it. He said to me, "Does your father know what you're doing?"
I know. Well, it was the least glamorous, I think, of all the rooms that I played just about everywhere. There was one little room. I followed Joe Mooney's quartet into the Dome in Minneapolis.
And well, I remember that one.
It was a kind of a funny little shocker. But still, the people loved it. And you had such marvelous reception. Even though they were around the bar and the bartender was dropping bottles and making noise, it just didn't seem to matter. I was lost in my music then. You could have shot the shotgun off at my head and I wouldn't have known it. I think I was having such a ball.
I was too, but I get people tell me that I was very snippy with people that were noisy.
Oh. I can't imagine that.
Well, if they say so, I probably was. You know, I'd probably tell the waiters to stop fighting among themselves. Or actually, you know, when a thing is happening, I think you don't realize how much fun it is until afterwards. We used to grumble a lot about the Hickory House, and, oh, I'll be glad to get out of this place. And then we couldn't wait to come back, and now that it's all over, really...
We wish it was there again.
Yes,
I
all
do.
The pleasant memories from that
well,
room,
I had
many laughs.
I had memories of that room. At that particular time, my trio was so beautifully organized. Joe Senecor was with me then, and Sandy Block. Sandy had worked with
me. Oh, yes, I know Sandy Block.
And the boys just played so well together. It was such a top-of-the-beat, happy-type thing. We did a lot of up-tempos, which are not my cup of tea. But doing it with those two, for some reason, they seemed so easy. And it was right from that group that we did the Piano Moods album. Joe and Sandy and I had not played together. I had let the group go and had gotten married for 6 months. And we came down and walked in the studio and... for Columbia, and just played the library, played two whole sides of the Piano Moods albums. Same arrangement, same everything. It came off so
well. It's in your subconscious, you know. You couldn't, sure. couldn't lose it that easily. Speaking of which, how about another solo number?
All righty. You know, I have a penchant for bossa novas. Penchant. I have a love for bossa novas.
It's twice in one program we've used that word. You know, people are going to think we're trying to be erudite or something.
Well, this is one that got lost in the shuffle when Jobim wrote Wave. This is in the same book that he put out with a lot of pretty melodic things, and this is the one that nobody paid any attention to. It's called Look to the Sky. I'd like to do it for you.
I'm so glad you played that one instead of one of the better known ones.
Well, I love Wave.
Look to the Sky.
I play that so much. You play Wave a lot, too.
I do, too. I'm going to learn this one because it's a very pretty Jobim tune.
I love the way he goes around the circles and gets out of gets himself in a hole and then uses a circle of fists to get back around again.
He kind of paints himself into a corner, musically speaking, doesn't he? Then he knows just how to get out of it. How about something you've written?
Well, you mentioned the Hickory House a moment ago, and it brought to mind when we first came back to we first went into the Hickory House, I had written a pretty song. I rather thought it was pretty, a pretty ballad, because we were in a very lovely room in the Cawthorn Hotel in Mobile, Alabama.
I know you weren't talking about the Hickory House.
This was called the Rose Room, and it was such a lovely, lovely old antique room. So I had done a pretty song, I thought, called Ode to a Rose, and when we came to the Hickory House and wanted to play there, and as you recall, there was this open thing that you looked into with all the stakes aging.
That's funny you bring that up, because I said to Mr. Popkin, there weren't many spotlights on the stage, you know, and I said, why have you got all the lights on the meat and not on us?
Well, we changed the name of the song to Ode to a Hickory Broiled Steak. I'd love to do that one for you.
Thank you.
does that sound like a hickory broiled steak?
I was just going to say, that sounds more like a rose to me than an ode to a steak. Hello, Mr. Popkin. He would have enjoyed that.
Yes,
but
I
that is a very, that's very pretty. Did Thank he ever you. Hear you play that?
Oh, yes, he heard me, and I don't know what he thought about us calling. I think he thought I wrote it for the steaks. I don't think he ever knew the background.
It's funny, he was always so busy reading the racing form. I always knew he was in a good mood if he'd slap me on the back. He used to slap me on the back so hard I almost choke. Then I would know he was in a good mood. Everything was okay.
And, you know, we had a lot of Damon Runyon characters that used to come in there that were fascinating.
Oh, my goodness.
They were wonderful. I'm so glad to have a chance to share that memory with you, Marion. I knew that you had played there, but I think I had... I was in and out of New York... up until 1950, I had married and had moved away, but it was just before that that I had gotten a chance to hear you and just loved what you played. You're going to play a solo today, too, aren't you?
A solo?
Aren't you? Yeah.
I will in a minute, but first of all, you brought up a tune that I recorded. I think it was the first record date I ever made, and I doubt if I've played it much since. Delightful, the Lovely.
Oh, yeah. Delicious,
Delightful, the Lovely. I forget how that goes, by Cole Porter.
Well, it goes and goes and goes if you've ever heard Mel Torme sing all the lyrics.
Yes,
it has a million lyrics, and I love them.
But it's funny, we recorded it on a label called Federal. I'm only bringing up because I get letters from people saying, how can I get that record? It was on Federal. What a terrible name for a label. And it was myself and a harpist.
Here in New York?
Margaret Ross, Don Lamond on drums, Bob Carter on bass. And I was so nervous, so green. We had a guy named Bernard Greenhouse on cello, and I guess that's it. But
well,
this
I must
is
tell
our
you,
two piano version of this tune.
Yes, I'd like to do it. I must tell you, though, I saw Don Lamond just 2 weeks ago at Disney World in the band down
there.
Yes, he's playing so
he
good.
And I just played a symphony date together.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, boy, he's wonderful.
He was
wonderful
playing fine.
The big orchestra.
He's still lovely.
He's still lovely.
Yes, you do this one. You kick it off. Thank you.
worked.
Lovely.
I love that tune, and nobody ever plays it. I'm so happy you suggested that one. You know, my brain has been kind of mulling around what you said about sand in my shoes.
Oh, that's so pretty. I wish you'd do it.
I'm game to try it, but you never know what's going to happen if you play a tune you haven't played in a million years. So
I'm sure if you did it, though, it would come out very pretty, and I don't think too many people remember that song. You might even make up a bridge.
It was from a movie.
Nobody would know.
Well, listen, I've done that, haven't you? You forgot the bridge or something, and so you play the bridge to some other tune.
Play the bridge from I'm in the Mood for Love on on many of them, sure.
It's funny, sometimes we should take some bridges and fit them to some other tunes.
Well, I have a record somewhere where the vocalist did nothing but the verses to songs and ran them all together, and they're so dumb. I'm afraid how bridges would be like that, too.
The only verse I really love to play on is the verse to Stardust, and I'd love to play the verse and don't go into the chorus. Just play the whole verse, you know.
People won't know what it is sometimes.
I know. There's a lot of fun things you can do. Well, meanwhile, I don't know if this is going to be fun, but I'm game
love
to
hear
try
you play
it anyway.
Anything you play.
All right, let's see. See what happens. This was from a movie with Mary Martin in it. That's all I know. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful.
You got hung up.
That's pretty.
I got hung up. Then I figured, well,
I didn't know. I bet nobody else would know.
It can't be helped because, you know, when you're doing those one-time-only things, I could stop and say, I was thinking to myself, shall I stop and start again? No, let it happen.
Oh, no. Nobody will know. It was beautiful. I didn't know.
Well, I knew. I knew.
That reminds me of a wonderful song. Maybe someday you might have a chance to do it on the show. The Night Has a Thousand Eyes.
Oh, I love that.
The bridge is so pretty.
How does that go? Play a little bit of that. Never played that, although I sort of vaguely know it, but I'll learn that. And I'd like to learn your tune, too, Dardanelle. Ode to a Rose.
To the Hickory Rose.
Ode to the Hickory, yes.
Well, I'm going to put that, I'm giving that to the TRO people who have some more of my little tricky things, and I hope they will take it, do a little publishing on some of those. But I'd love to have you have it. It's kind of nice.
Yes, and I'd like to play it. You know, we only have one more tune to do. It's kind of ridiculous. I'd like to sit here and carry on for
like
six
to.
More hours. But how about let's delve into some Harold Arlen.
All right.
What do you think about that? By the way, having you here is such a pleasure. You have no idea.
Well, I'm just enjoying it so much. I'm sorry it's going to be concluding pretty soon after this song. And I just appreciate your trying the second time around, Marion. I was heartbroken when I came back from Japan and found that you had tried to catch me over there. But, you know, 13 hours difference makes all the difference in the world, and I was totally lost, out of touch with everybody.
Well, I knew it would happen sooner or later that we'd get here.
Well, I loved
it. Here we are.
Just loved it.
And, again, I'm the left piano, and you're the right piano.
The stereo kids.
The stereo kids, that's
sure.
Right.
You do it.
You've just heard Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and her guest Dardanelle Hadley in a session from 1984. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Dick Phipps, recording engineer Mike Moran, mastering engineer Sherry Hutchinson, production assistant Luke Phillips, executive producer William D. Hay. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Digital archiving of Piano Jazz was made possible in part by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for the original production of this episode was provided by a grant from Exxon Corporation. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.